You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, I am going to recap the Cavs' weekend games against the Magic and the Rockets. We'll get to that later in the show. But first, we have a special guest to talk a little bit about Larry Sanders, to talk about where the Cavs are at right now, and that's Carter Rodriguez from Fear the Sword and 120 Sports. Carter, how's it going?
You know, it's funny. I'm not sure I'm a special guest at this point. I think I'm just a guest. I've been on too much.
In my personal power rankings, Carter, you're number one. You're the eternal number one.
Don't tell anyone else.
I mean, whatever. They can come get these hands. But the big news, of course, coming out over the weekend is that the Cavs look like they may be adding Larry Sanders. We're seeing a couple different reports on this. Shams Charina from the Vertical said that they were in deep discussions about a deal with Larry Sanders, coming close to a deal, with that likely being done Monday. And James is obviously, you know, a very, very reputable source. And then you had the guys that are closer to the team, the Joe Vardens, the Dave McMenamins, kind of saying no, like, look, there's two guys that they're looking at signing. There's a couple different directions this could go, and Larry Sanders is certainly an option. But this isn't a surprise, really, because Andrew Bogut, of course, broke his tibia. He's already back in Australia arguing with people on Twitter as he is sitting on a couch and taking opiates, as he tweeted. But they're going to, Cavs are probably going to add someone. They're going to cut Andrew Bogut on Monday in all likelihood. Carter, when you heard about Larry Sanders potentially being an option for this team, what was your reaction?
I mean, it just sort of makes sense, especially in the wake of the Bogut injury, right? Like, so Bogut was the kind of a guy they thought might be able to help them this year. He goes down. And now your other options are people like Jared Sullinger, Andy Varejao, some D-League flotsam. Sorry to Trevor Magnotti, but that's for the most part what we're dealing with. And as a result, at least mentally for me, I think you kind of want to pivot to, okay, where's value? Value is kind of the interesting word here. And Larry Sanders very well, I mean, it's more likely than not that if they sign him, he's not going to help much this year, right? Mm-hmm. He hasn't played for 3 years. It's really hard to come be on a title winner after not just playing professional basketball for 3 years. But with that said, this guy has, I believe, the seventh highest block percentage in NBA history. He has a ton of defensive tools. LeBron James, as people have noted, has played with a guy who's spent a couple years out of the league and come back and revived his career, and Chris Anderson, who ended up being hugely valuable for those Heat teams. And Larry Sanders is a heck of a lot younger than Chris Anderson. So assuming that they can provide a good, stable environment for him and he's committed, why not? Especially if they can use the rest of their mid-level, which I think I've read they can do, to lock him up for a couple years.
Yeah, I think, you know, but here's the thing, though. I just don't know why you would rush into locking him up for a couple years. Let's start there.
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
Well, I think the point is, if you're locking him up for a couple years, it's on a really minimal salary. And all salaries are, valuable to the Cavs because they're into the tax. But the idea is, I don't think if I'm David Griffin, I want to do another team's prep work for them. Because if they sign Larry Sanders to a one-year deal and he shows a lot and then he gets offered, he shows something but doesn't really help the Cavs this year, and then gets offered a ton of money or more money than the Cavs can offer elsewhere because the Cavs won't have his bird rights, then they've wasted their development time. And this is a developmental play.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a developmental play to a certain extent that you can still develop a 28-year-old. You know what I mean?
The point is, it's just getting him back up to speed, though. It's not that he's like, you know, it's not like they're trying to get something out of him that he hasn't shown. It's just getting him back. So in that regard, it's developmental, not in the traditional sense.
You know, you're correct on that. I think I wouldn't see the way, if I'm looking at this, I don't know if I want to do it. I would do like a Jordan McRae type deal maybe, where it's like you get him for the rest of the year and then you get him on a non, like a guaranteed day for next year. Like, I don't think you commit anything more than like a prorated two-year type of deal, right? Like,
yeah,
you don't
want to
do anything.
I just don't want to lock him up for a half a season.
Right, because
I think if you're doing this, you're doing this with a long-term plan in mind, with the chance of having to eat that salary if it doesn't work.
Yeah,
but
get him playing summer league, honestly, might be an interesting way to do it. I don't know if he'd want to do it. I don't know if the Cavs would really want him to do it, but that'd be a functional way to get him reps because I agree with you. I don't think there's a very high percentage that he is going to be a useful player the rest of the year.
Gravy.
Yeah. But I mean, the most useful thing he could theoretically do is just get reps now and then take minutes away from Tristan, so Tristan isn't playing 35 minutes a night or whatever. And then maybe if I know Tristan loves his consecutive games streak, but he probably could use a night off. Like, that guy plays incredibly hard every single night. And if Larry Sanders gives him a night off, even if he sucks, like, at least he's eating minutes. Like, I think there's certainly value to that. And he's the opposite side of the same coin with Bogut, in the sense that Bogut was going to come in and he was not only probably going to eat Tristan Thompson's minutes a little bit, but he was also probably going to be useful in some way. He was at least going to be able to do some things, and I think like that's why the Cavs went with him. It's not a problem. They picked him because he could play and help them win a title right now. Larry is something.
Yeah, this is different. A different kind of move. Yeah, 100%. And what is kind of nice in a way is that there are less expectations of Larry, and from Larry probably, to be getting a ton of minutes right away. Whereas Bogut presented it's a first world problem, but it did represent a bit of a problem for Ty Lue, where he had to be, once they're healthy, they were going to have 12 guys he had to juggle in the rotation that were all rotation caliber players.
Mm-hmm.
This is a lower impact signing and more long term. It's like not that different than like having someone like Kay Felder on their roster, even though he has different set of circumstances.
Yeah, and Felder, maybe you could. I mean, you're not going to send Sanders down to the D League either.
I mean, couldn't you?
It's
so close, just get him like reps playing.
Yeah, okay, but the trick of this, let's say they sign him on Monday, right? Like, let's say they sign him on March 13th. And they bring him in. So the Charger in the last part of their season, their regular season ends on April 1st. For one, they don't have very many home games left. So they have a home game on Tuesday against the Erie BayHawks. They play at home on the 18th against the Windy City Bulls, and that is the last regular season home game they have. So they'd be going to it's not like he'd be going far. He'd be going. The Charger are going to play in cities like Fort Wayne, Indiana, against the Mad Ants, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, against the Drive, where, Akron alum Pat Forsythe's on the team, Ray McCollum's on the team. They'd be playing in Westchester, New York, against the God Maurice Endor and the Westchester Knicks. You have the Maine Red Claws. And he'd be going against good bigs in those games, or serviceable bigs in those games. I don't know if you're trying to develop Sanders. If you would have signed him in September, I almost think the D-League, utilizing the D-League would have made more sense then, but if you're trying
that
to...
That makes sense.
If the purpose right now to sign him is to give you a healthy body and to eat up Tristan's minutes, I don't know if shuffling him back and forth makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. There's just not enough time. It's almost better just to keep him with the main roster, have him learn the rotations, learn some plays. But functionally, he should be able to do something... if they can get him to like 70% of what he was, he definitely should be able to eat some minutes, especially, ideally this would be a situation where the Cavs lock up the one seed with 5 or 6 games to go. And they can just say, hey, Larry, go play 25, 30 minutes a game and remember how to play basketball for a little while. Because it is hard when you haven't played for a while. There's no way around it. Even though I think sometimes people lean towards worrying about the skill guys with these kind of things. Larry Sanders was a alley-oop finisher and shot blocker, so people think because he's not just like, I think people think it's easier for those guys to get back into the swing because it's like, it's not like a shooter who hasn't been putting up shots, but like, it's just a mental speed thing. Mm-hmm. Like, the NBA moves so fast, and you have to make decisions very instinctively and like muscle memory. And if you don't have that muscle memory because you haven't played in 3 years, probably going to take a minute to get it back.
Agreed. Before we continue this, Carter, just going to take a quick break to let our listeners know about today's sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. SeatGeek, as you know, is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. You can download the app on any iPhone, any Android, and you're going to get tickets for games, for concerts, for plays, for anything you want to go see. You're going to find it in the app from all the biggest ticket sellers, so you're going to get the best deal possible. In SeatGeek, all of the tickets are graded on a scale where you're going to know it's a good deal, you're going to know if it's a bad deal based on if it's green or if it's red, and you're going to get to see the view from your seat right in the app, so you're not going to be concerned if you're going to have your view blocked or if you're going to have any other issues when you go to the show or go to the game. I've used SeatGeek before. I used it to get Migos tickets. I've used it to get Run the Jewels tickets. If I can't get the ticket from the main site and get it right away and I have to buy it at the last minute, I'm using SeatGeek. And if you this week, the Cavs are playing at home on Tuesday. They're playing at home on Thursday against the Pistons and the Jazz. If you want to see Larry Sanders' possible debut on Tuesday, you could go get tickets right now on SeatGeek. And my listeners today can save $20 on their first purchase by using the promo code LOCAVS. That's LOCAVS. And you're going to save $20 on that first purchase under a mail-in rebate. Just enter in that promo code under the settings tab, and you get $20 back from SeatGeek on that first purchase. Go download that app, use the promo code LOCAVS, and save $20 today. All right, so Carter, the other thing with Larry Sanders that I think is interesting is he would be, in a way, and I don't want to make this too over the top, make this a hyperbole sort of discussion, but he would, in a sense, sort of be a trailblazer. He was one of the first NBA players, along with guys like Royce White, that came back from that are at least attempting to play professional basketball and after having an open battle with mental illness. Sanders left basketball in part because of his battle with anxiety, and I mean large part due, and he had the drug suspensions and stuff. He has, in addition to his always dealing with anxiety, he has been arrested since there's a charge that he had over the summer in LA that I think certainly probably impacted team's view of him. But it's an interesting discussion because I think you see some people have wanted to sort of push this as being a thing in the past, that when he says he's ready to go, which you certainly have to take into account, that he's, you know, quote unquote, fine.
He's fixed.
Yeah, he's fixed. So I think I just want to say that I think this is problematic. Anxiety is not always as severe as something like bipolar disorder or anything else, but it is something that can affect you on a day-to-day basis. It is not something that you can just fix and never deal with again. I myself have anxiety issues, and it's something that it isn't something that is fixed after one day, right? Like I don't meditate one time and it's fine, or like go to counseling for 6 months and it's fine. I think if you're going to invest in Larry Sanders, you have to be willing to commit to him as a person as well as a basketball player. Like this has to be creating a good environment for him, an environment where he's going to feel comfortable. And I think that's really, if you can't in your mind and in good faith do that, I don't know if you can reasonably expect a lot out of him or expect to turn him around in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people have said that the NBA doesn't do a particularly good job of supporting mental health because it's, I mean, America doesn't do a great job of supporting mental health, right?
Right.
So, you know, it does. It what is good to count on here is one, the Cavaliers have a really supportive, stable locker room, which is really funny to say after all the drama that this team can have.
Literally, Channing Frye, Richard Jefferson, LeBron winning a title,
champ,
James Jones. Like, I don't like. 2 years ago, I would have been a lot more skeptical of this, of the Cavs locker room being the right place for Larry Sanders to come in. But it's a very healthy locker room now. Like, and
yeah,
they
welcomed
in Derek Williams. They've welcomed him in Kyle Korver. They've welcomed in guys and made them feel very much at home, from Kay Felder to Jordan McRae on up. Like, yeah.
Think about the fact that Kyle Korver was already hard selling Andrew Bogut. And obviously, there's a bit of self, you know, motivation there. But Kyle Korver came in during the Cavs' worst month of LeBron's like career. And still was like selling how tight the locker room was, mm-hmm. to Bogut. So like, I do think that when you have, obviously, like certain people are going to struggle, especially people with, you know, anxiety disorders, things like that. But a big part of helping people overcome or manage these issues is a stable environment, right? And I think the Cavaliers can provide that for them.
Yeah, I think they can too. I think, you even go up to David Griffin, up to Dan Gilbert, you have a very strong power structure within the organization. I think it's a pretty unified group, and I think that's really worth noting. And the other thing is LeBron himself has come out and said how he feels about Larry Sanders. I do have a clip of the quote. Carter, are you familiar with what LeBron said?
Yes, I am.
So I'm going to play the quote from LeBron James just so everyone can hear him. Without me reading this quote, you can just hear directly from him. So here's LeBron James talking about Larry Sanders on March 11th.
Everything he's been through and been out of the league for so long, and how much can he give you when he has been on an NBA team?
I could talk about when he played, and I was an athletic, big guy, incredible shot blocking skills, anticipation around the rim, could finish around the rim, and block shots and be able to guard perimeter guys as well. With his hiatus, I don't know what he was going through, so I can't never comment about somebody's personal life because I wasn't a part of it. But it looks like he wants another opportunity, and hopefully, if we're the team, hopefully we give him an opportunity. Why not?
So Carter, that quote, LeBron saying "Why not, Larry Sanders?" He said, "I don't know what's going on with him, so I can't directly comment on it." But you want to give that guy an opportunity. LeBron is not the GM of the team, right? But LeBron James has an enormous amount of sway and enormous amount of importance in the locker room. And if he co-signs it, it becomes a lot harder for other guys on the team to object to it.
Yeah, there's something to that. And also, I just think it's just another example of, like, LeBron really, like, loves to empower people. It's very clear when it comes down to his quote-unquote posse, as Phil Jackson might say, or the players around him. Like, look at how much he loves J.R. Smith and how much he builds up J.R. Smith and frankly, like, advocates for him. J.R., is a well-known screw-up. Before his time in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. That was the book on him, and LeBron says, no, I want him here. I think that guy's really good. And this is where I think the basketball intelligentsia kind of misses the buck sometimes, is we like to assign an identity to someone, and that is what they do forever, and that is what they are forever. And someone who's close to the game, like a LeBron, can say, hey, I can work with this. And I have so much control and power that I can advocate for these guys who, like, someone like Birdman, who he clearly adores, someone like JR, who he clearly adores. And I think it's a really good thing for the league that the league's best player cares so much about building people back up. And that's not just to say it's completely altruistic either. Like, he's doing this because he thinks it's going to help him win a title, but his self-interest happens to line up with altruism, and it's a really good thing.
Yeah, I 100% am on board with that. Carter, let's wrap it up on this. The Cavs have just snapped their 3-game losing streak. They've gone through some weird games. J.R. Smith came back. Darren Williams has played pretty well. I think his pick and roll fit with LeBron James has been really good recently. Is there anything for you that has stood out to you, whether it's positive, negative, neutral, that you've been really intrigued by in the past week or so?
I've been really intrigued by continuity. I'm really anxious about the continuity on this team right now. Not to say I don't think they're going to make the finals or don't have a chance to win the finals, but the fact of the matter is Kevin Love's coming back now. As soon as JR comes back, Kyle Korver goes out. They might be adding Larry Sanders. This team has the real possibility, if not probability, of playing a lot of five-man units in the playoffs that have played minimal time together. And continuity matters a lot in the NBA. It's just an inherent knowing where a guy's going to be with a certain personnel grouping on the floor. Every time, if you notice, when teams run out green lineups, five-man units that have never played before, a lot of the times those lineups get waxed early on because it's just hard. You don't know where guys are supposed to be yet. So the Cavs have not a ton of time left to get if you think about it, Derek Williams, Kyle Korver, and Darren Williams three really important guys have not played with the full complement of Cavaliers. And they've got to get – everyone's got to get accustomed to each other in a short amount of time. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much Lou experiments in the meantime.
Yeah. J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver, it's only been two games since as you and I record this, and it's going to be three as of Monday, that J.R. Smith and Kyle Korver haven't played together. That's not great, because I think Ty Lue does have very interesting decisions to make when it comes to playing Korver and J.R. Smith and Amon Shumpert. Like, Shumpert, when he plays like he did against the Magic, like, it makes you sort of have to kind of think about how he fits in again, right? Like, and I don't think that's I still think he'd be number three on my list if every guy is healthy, but if Jarrett's not 100% back, if Korver's foot's a problem, you have to play Shumpert, and you have to find a way to distribute those minutes for those guys. And that's certainly an interesting discussion. I think that's a very interesting thing, too, because you do have all these new pieces, and I think defensively that's going to be the big thing to look at, because offensively I think LeBron James is going to be good enough and Kyrie is going to be good enough to make them a really potent offense, because especially when things get simplified, yeah, you can lead on those two guys. And Kevin Love's coming back too, and it looks like that's going to be sooner than we may have thought as well, because he's traveling with the team again. And Jason Lloyd noted in his final thoughts from Saturday that the 6 weeks was always a long sell by the team on his injury. So the defensive thing is, I think, most important with the continuity, just because they've been bottom third in defensive rating.
Absolutely.
For a while. Like, they're not particularly good at defending the three-pointer, and they have to know about rotations, know about who's going to be where, and some of that is effort, and I don't think they play super hard on that end every night, and that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, but I do think at the same time there are things to worry about there, and continuity, especially with defense typically being a more complicated thing than offense, I think that matters.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
All right, Carter, thank you for coming on, man. Make sure you follow Carter on Twitter at Carter_Shea. Check out all his work. He just wrote a really good piece at Fear the Sword last week about LeBron's minutes that I think kind of added some nuance to the discussion. So go check that out. And now we're going to transition into covering the Cavs' two weekend games against Orlando and Houston with the Magic game, which snapped a three-game losing streak.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest-growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
For the Cavs coming up first. So Cavs Magic. Cavs beat the Magic 116-104 on Saturday night. Snapped a three-game losing streak. The Cavs have now beat Orlando 16 straight times. That's tied for the longest active streak in the NBA of one team beating another team. So pretty good. If the Cavs need to get on the right, back on the right track, play the Magic. The Magic, as pointed out by Fear the Sword's Trevor Magnotti in his game preview over at Fear the Sword, the last time the Orlando Magic beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, Brandon Weeden was the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. So pretty hysterical. The Browns in that time have not found a quarterback, obviously, and the Cavs just beat the crap out of the Magic, which is it's pretty wild. So, three takeaways from this game. Number one, I thought Amon Shumpert had one of his best games of recent memory. And if he plays like this, I think it certainly can complicate Tyronn Lue's decisions at shooting guard. I think he's continuing to start, which partly maybe because J.R. Smith is on that quote-unquote minutes restriction, which has not been yet defined by Ty Lue, but so far has hovered around 20 minutes. Shumpert was 5-7 from the field, 3-4 from 3, 2-2 from the line, with 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 15 points and a plus 8 in this game. It was pretty solid on defense, and I thought had just a really, really nice game overall. If he plays like this, I think he can make Tyronn Lue have to face some interesting decisions when Kyle Korver comes back from his foot injury and J.R. Smith fully gets back in the flow of things. And that certainly is going to be interesting, which I don't necessarily expect Shump to have games like this night in and night out the rest of the regular season, but I think it's certainly something to monitor. It is certainly something to see if he continues to play that way, and it's a good thing for the Cavs if he does play this way. I don't think if you're a Cavs fan, you should be thinking, okay, I want to jump the tank just because I want to make sure Korver and J.R. Smith get the minutes in the playoffs. I think having Shump as a healthy body could be really helpful. He can be an impactful defender. He can, if he hits threes, he can make defenses have to defend another player. He can fill in minutes, probably defending threes if they really needed him to against certain teams. And I think against Toronto, if the Cavs do face Toronto, for instance, he's going to be really useful in defending DeMar DeRozan. And he's going to have some use against teams that have twos who can score, you know, maybe against Clay, maybe against Danny Green. There are guys like that where I think Shump could be really, really useful. And I think the Cavs are functionally going to be more comfortable with him defending points as a when you have him on the floor versus Korver. He can slide over and defend ones in a way that Kyle Korver can't. JR, I think, can. But I think that defensive ability the Cavs believe in is going to keep Shump on the court, even if I'm of the opinion that Shump is slightly overrated on that end. Number two, Channing Frye and J.R. Smith both had good games, and this is a good sign for the Cavs. They were a combined 5 of 12 from 3, with Frye going 2 of 5 and J.R. going 3 of 7. 11 points for Smith. Frye had 12 points. Both played well. Frye was plus 10 in this game. J.R. was only plus 2, but still played a good game. The Cavs are going to need good minutes from both these guys, and I think J.R. getting back on the flow of things, you saw signs of that in this game. He was more active. He didn't look quite as tired. Hit two threes back-to-back. He just looked to have, like, hit more of a bounce in his game against Orlando. Frye hit open shots. Was still kind of a problem on defense, but if he's hitting shots, he's easier to justify playing. And I thought he did a really nice job. Orlando isn't the best team in the world, but you get a good game like this, maybe can snowball into something bigger for the Cleveland Cavaliers. JR in particular, it's good to see him getting back playing. I don't expect him to be himself just yet, but when he shoots 4 of 8 from the field and 3 of 7 from 3 and is playing decent defense, that's kind of what you ask out of JR Smith. And 20 minutes for him, well, let's see when that gets bumped up. And let's see how him and Korver can coexist when Korver does return, probably, you know, at the end of this week. Lastly, LeBron James remains ridiculous. This is not an obvious necessary thing we need to say. This isn't something you don't know. But 38 minutes for him, 8 of 14 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. Did miss 4 free throws, but 13 assists, 12 boards, plus 12. Had a block as well. A really, really good game for him. And it came in just some interesting ways. He had, for the second time this year, he had back-to-back triple-doubles. Season high or career high 9th of the year, and he's impacted the game in every way. When he has games like this, and the Cavs, you know, miss 10 free throws and they struggle from three a little bit, and Kyrie, you know, is only 9 of 23 from the field, LeBron having games like this is a reminder that the Cavs can just figure some things out. And as a side note to that, Deron Williams and LeBron are finding some chemistry. Jordan Zerim, you can just search his name on Twitter, you'll find him. He wrote a piece that I retweeted on my account at CWM Writes about Deron Williams and LeBron James is finding a chemistry. They're finding a place together, and it's starting to show. You know, even though Williams has only been here with the Cavs for, you know, 6 games or so, he's only been with them for just a handful of games so far. So, Cavs win that game. A win is a win. It's a good palate cleanser for them. 3-game losing streak for them. It's not never great, especially in a month where they're not going to have the luxury of going back home a lot. This upcoming week when they play Detroit on Tuesday, Utah on Thursday, you don't see a team. You're going to get a situation where the Cavs will not be home for most of the rest of the month. They have a game against Philly and the last day of the month, and on the 25th, they play the Wizards at home. So it's not the Cavs are going to be having the luxury of returning home and getting their comfort back on their home floor. They're going to have to do it in situations where they're on the road, they're playing, you know, back-to-backs in LA and things like that. So getting a win like this is good, and it potentially could be just a good thing for them to get back into the flow of things and just not have to have that loss hanging over their head. So now we will turn to the Rockets game, which the Cleveland Cavaliers fell against Houston on the second half of a back-to-back. The Cavs lose this game 117-112. The Cavs led by as many as 14 points in this game. One of the best in terms of just pure fun regular season games of the year. So here are my three takeaways from this game. Number one, you can chalk a lot of this game up to fatigue. I think Houston is very good. I think there is a non-zero chance that this team is the Cavaliers' opponent in the NBA Finals. It would not shock me if, come June, we're seeing Cavs and Rockets, for whatever reason that may be. And for what it's worth, 538 does have the Rockets with a 7% chance of winning the title. They should the Cavs, under that same metric, the Carmelo metric, have a 4% chance. Wizards and Celtics both are at 6. So take that for what it's worth, because I don't think most people are not going to argue that the Wizards and Celtics and the Rockets and other teams have better chances of winning the title than the Cavs. Nonetheless, the Cavs lose this game, and again, fatigue to me was a big part of this. LeBron played 40 minutes, including all 12 minutes of the fourth quarter in this game. Kyrie played 37, looked very fatigued by the end of this game. Shumpert played 30. J.R. Smith played 22. Derek Williams played 23. Tristan Thompson had to play a very grueling 33 minutes. RJ played 31. Everyone in the starting lineup played 30 minutes or more. And again, second half of a back-to-back in a game where the Cavs only were able to pull guys out around the minute and 30 mark of that Magic game. So a lot of this game, to me, does come down to fatigue. You can't chalk everything up to it. Houston played pretty well. The Cavs actually shot a lot better than Houston, but Houston took 96 shots in this game, made 41 of them. The Cavs took 80 shots, made 42. Houston got the line 28 times. The Cavs just 13. Rockets made 19 of their free throws. Houston just beat the Cavs on value, really. And the free throws played a huge factor in this game. They didn't even shoot better than the Cavs from the line, but if you just look at the raw free throw numbers, the fact that they got to the line made eight more free throws and got to the line 50 more times made a huge impact in this game. And the Cavs really just looked tired by this in the second half after leading by as many as 14. They just were slow in rotations. They were slow getting up and down the floor. Houston's style caused them a lot of problems. And I think, second half of back-to-back is certainly different than the NBA Finals. But this is what Houston does. They shoot a lot. They're going to hit a lot of threes. They're going to get to the line. And they're going to play at a pace that is going to wear you down. Those rest days in a possible NBA Finals series would matter a lot. Hang over that head of the series quite a bit. Number two is that the Cleveland Cavaliers, again, missed Kevin Love. Shocking, I know, because some people would, make you think that Kevin Love doesn't matter that much. But in this game, the Rockets tied their season high of 20 rebounds. 20 offensive rebounds, excuse me. They out-rebounded the Cavs 52-38. At times, Tristan Thompson was the only guy on the floor pulling down rebounds for the Cavs. At least it felt like, and he only had 8 rebounds. Guys like Patrick Beverley, who did only have 4, Harden had 10, Capella had 11, Nene had 6 off the bench, Anderson had 6, Ariza had 7. The Rockets just out-rebounded the Cavs, and the offensive rebounds in particular were hugely important in this game. Them getting those 20 offensive rebounds against the Cavs of just 4 gave them extra possessions, gave them chances to make up for situations where they missed 1 or 2 or 3 shots, sometimes at the rim, sometimes they were threes, and just keep getting chances to score to get the Cavs in foul trouble and to wear them down on defense. Kevin Love, he's not going to keep them from getting all those offensive rebounds. If he gets in foul trouble, that's a problem. But he's going to be near the rim in these situations where the Cavs were very willing to switch Tristan Thompson, as they should be, out onto Harden, out onto Beverly, in situations where they didn't want to just give Harden a chance to go around the corner and get a layup. Tristan Thompson, in this situation, ends up out on the three-point line, and he's not able to crash the boards like he would. In this situation, Kevin Love's going to be probably defending a Capella or an Nene. Those are not guys that are particularly stretchy. They're not shooters. They're going to do all the work inside, and Kevin Love can handle that. He's going to be able to rebound against those guys well, and he's going to play a huge part in that. You're going to see him, and if these two teams do make matchup in the finals, you're going to see Kevin Love being a huge part of this series. Just in terms of rebounding, he's going to help with shooting, of course, and scoring and all these other things. But as a rebounder, Kevin Love would be incredibly important if these two teams do meet in the finals. And you would just have to think his ability as a defensive rebounder, whether you think he's great or you think he's just good, that is certainly going to be an important part of that series, and he was greatly missed in this game. Lastly, let's look at Amon Shumpert tonight and look at J.R. Smith tonight. Those two guys were a combined 3 of 15 from the field, a combined 1 of 10 from the three-point line. Not an ideal night for those guys. Shumpert in particular missed some open threes. J.R. still looks like he's getting his feet under him. He missed some threes that I feel like are threes he would normally make, particularly ones that were deep and open. This is a guy that thrives on those type of shots. It's pretty rare for J.R. Smith to just have a game where he makes 1 2-point shot and not a three. You know, I talked about this in the previous segment, and we talked about this with Carter, and I've talked about this on previous shows, but the shooting guard position to me is one of the more fascinating ones when you look at how the Cavs are going to sort out their playoff rotation, which hasn't really had a chance to function quite yet. The Cavs are really going to have to get one of these guys going. I think they both had decent games against Orlando. You could chalk some of this up to being the second half of a back-to-back and then being tired. They're really going to have to get something out of these guys. You know, it's not time to freak out. It's not time to be particularly worried. But watching these guys on a game-to-game basis, to me, feels more important than, you know, how LeBron looks. Although I think LeBron's fatigue might be something where they just need to just rest him on Tuesday. I might just do that if I were Tyronn Lue. But you need to get Shumpert. You need to get Smith rolling. You need to get Korver back on track as well. That shooting guard position to me is very fascinating. We'll see how the Cavs distribute minutes. JR seems like he's still on something of a minutes restriction. 22 is about where he's played the previous two games. I think he played 19 and 21. So he's kind of been hovering around that range. We'll see if he can get back up to 30 once, you know, he gets back more in shape and he feels more comfortable. And we'll see how that affects Shumpert. We'll see how that affects Korver as well. And that's, I think, especially important because Richard Jefferson, who got the start tonight, at the other forward spot next to LeBron, is probably not going to have very many games where he's 4-4 from 3 and 6-6 from the field. He's going to be a decent 3-point shooter. He may make 2 or 3 in a game, but he's probably not going to have a series in the finals or in the playoffs where he's hitting 4-4 from every game. You're going to have to get 3-point shooting from other spots, and JR and Shump and Kyle Korver are the likely candidates, and they need to figure out how that rotation, again, is going to work, and they need to get Shumpert and Smith sort of rolling. And I think JR in particular, as I've said on the show several times, is kind of the guy you hope becomes the best version of himself for something close to it again. Because, again, he was not playing well before his injury, and he still is some just kind of hovering at a bad level, and has not particularly shot well since he's come back. All right, so that's going to be it for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow to preview Cavs Pistons with Marlo Alter of the Detroit Free Press up in Detroit. He helps cover the Pistons for them, and he's like me, an Ohio University alumni, so there may be some Ohio basketball talk just at the top of the show before we get into the Cavs Pistons round 2, second time these two teams have played in a week. But again, thanks again to Carter Rodriguez for coming on today's show. Cavs beat the Magic on Saturday to snap that 3-game losing streak and then lose to the Rockets 117-112. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring the podcast. Again, use that promo code LOCAVS and save $20 on your first SeatGeek purchase. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow when Marlo Alter from the Detroit Free Press joins the show.